you get that? We're going to keep the covenant. Marriage is a covenant, not an expediency, not a simply human contract. It's a covenant with God. If we're going to keep the covenant, it's going to require grace. Now, I want to begin tonight by talking about what I call the gracious word. Remember I said last night that we can pick each other apart in the church or in the home, never lie. But the opposite of that is, and this is where I want to take off tonight, is the art of the gracious word. There's an analogy. You know, God created the whole universe by the spoken word. And I tell you that to remind myself and you perhaps that we create by the spoken word. The primary creative dynamic in our homes is the spoken word. Our children are creations. I believe that. I believe we take kids, and kids are born with basic personalities. And all day tomorrow is going to be given to the art of being a parent, the art of raising children. But I'm going to overlap a little bit on that, a couple of things tonight, unavoidably. But one of the things I want to say right now is that children are the sum total of what we have said to them and about them. Other things affect them, but nothing like the spoken word. You realize that? What we say to our kids creates a child, a person. They're born with basic personalities, strong-willed, compliant, various things, but that's a very small part of it. What our children are. Now, of course, the problem we've got other people are talking to them, too. You know, it's not just us talking with them. And a marriage is the product of the spoken word primarily. You look at a woman who's been married to the same man for 30 years, and if she's defeated, and I've met women who are just defeated, they've given up, and it's because they have been defeated by the spoken word. It's written all over their face. Now, and whether our home is going to be a place where our children are going to want to be, or where we're going to want to be, depends primarily on the spoken word. As I said last night, God does not require us to tell all the truth we know. My wife has many shortcomings. And I have a couple. And and that's right. My wife, as I said last night, she could spend all her time pointing out my shortcomings and never once lie. What is the opposite of that? The opposite is the spoken word. Now, what the spoken word does, it creates, now hear me, it creates a climate, it creates an atmosphere, it creates a tone in the home, which makes many other things possible. You see, I believe this about raising children, that the number one thing with me is their attitude. If you get a kid's attitude right, you got something to work with. You can do something with the kid. But you get a kid turned off, a bad attitude, and you got real problems. And attitudes are everything. And the attitudes are created by the atmosphere in the home. You see, are we for each other or against each other? Do you realize how many kids think their parents are against them? The parents aren't, they think they are. I kind of picked up on this. I got started thinking along this line when I was doing some counseling of troubled teenagers several years ago. And without fail, these teenagers would say this. They would say, "Boy, you know, if I mess up, boy, I hear about it. But if I do something right, never a word." Now, what is the grace of the spoken word, or the gracious word? It's this, that we can choose, as I've already taught us, we can choose to not jump on each other's faults all the time. We're not going to change much anyway. You have no right to marry somebody with the plan of changing them. If you don't like them, don't marry them. A marriage, that's the part of the version of, well, I'll marry him to win him to the Lord. God has a plan for evangelism, and it's not marriage. It's preaching. And he has a plan for a life, for changing life. It's the gospel. It's not marriage. You understand? You got no right to marry somebody with the idea, well, I'm going to get them, then I'm going to change them. But it doesn't work anyway. It's just not right. Not that we are not willing to change, but that's not, you understand, marriage is not a, I didn't marry my wife so I could make her over into something I want her to be. I liked what she was, that's why I married her. Still like what she is, like better all the time. But you see, the hardest people to, the hard, it's hardest for men to learn this, by the way. And the older you are, and again, we are talking about, I'm dealing in generalities, it may not be true of you, but the chances are that the older you are, the less natural and easy for it is for you, if you're a man, to speak the gracious word. I dare say we have many men here who were raised to hear, get in trouble every time you messed up, but not much was said if you did it right. And men often feel silly doing it. I tell you, one of the hardest things I've ever learned. But it's worth it. You create an atmosphere. The spoken word. You say, and what do I mean by that? Well, I'll give you some examples. And you're going to think it's silly. And it is. It's not silly. It's ridiculous. Sometimes. It's also fun. You can say, honey, you look better by accident. Most women do on purpose. Honey, with Vic Salve on, you smell better than most women do. With my sin perfume, Falon Van, you just really great. Have I ever told you how lucky I am to have you? Honey, I can meet you 10 times a day. I'm glad every time I see you. And you sit in front of people. Boy, isn't your mother pretty, fellas? But you got, you ever see a prettier woman than that? Oh, and she'll just say, quit it. You talk about hypocrisy. That's it. And, honey, you worked hard on this meal, and I appreciate it. You hear that? Honey, you thank you for this. Fellas, do you thank your wife for every meal she cooks? If you don't do it, start tonight. That's an order. And I'm serious. You thank her for every meal she cooks. And, honey, the house sure looks nice today. Honey, I know you didn't feel very good today, but you got up and kept working. I want you to know I've noticed it, and I appreciate it. The spoken word, and you have to work at it. Let me tell you, life is unhappy enough. Have you noticed that life will furnish us all the misery we need? We need to manufacture our own. Life will give us our, listen to me, life will give us our misery for nothing. We have to manufacture our own joy. Did you get that? Most of our joy has to be if the only joy we get in life is the joy that just happens to us, or the joy that just happens for us, we're not going to have much joy. You see, this is a very strong Christian doctrine. The Bible says that we're to rejoice in spite of tears. Count it all joy when you enter into many temptations. You see, it doesn't take a Christian to have joy when everything's going right. An idiot can do that. An unbeliever, I mean the worst old atheist ever lived, can rejoice when everything's going right. That doesn't take any grace, doesn't take any talent. But the art is to rejoice in spite of, not because of. And because life has a way of giving us more tears than smiles, we need to manufacture our own. You got that? Our homes can have just as much joy in them as we choose to put into them. And the primary agency, the dynamic, is the spoken word. Now, there are other ways, but the spoken word. And it has to go on day by day. You create an atmosphere. It creates, do you understand what I'm talking about? It's a tone, which makes room for all kinds of good stuff. But I'll tell you, you get a house full of bitter words. Nobody wants to be there. I don't. If your home is full of bitterness, don't invite me because I don't want to come. I got enough bitterness in my life I have to deal with. I'm not going looking for it. Amen. And our kids have all kinds of bitterness. You realize how bitter it is in teenage society? You got teenagers? Grade school society. Our kids put up with bitterness day in and day out of all kinds. Much of it we don't have any idea about. They don't need it when they get home. They don't need a dad who never says and never pays full attention to his son or his daughter until they've done something wrong, until they've messed up. Then and only then do they get their dad's full attention. They do not need that. They need a dad who'll say to them at least once a day, hey, kid, I like what you're turning out to be. You're doing all right. You know that? I'm proud of you. You're looking good. I'm glad you're mine. I told you that lately, son. I'm glad you decided to be my kid and not somebody else's. It's an honor. When was the last time you ever took your kid with you and thanked him for working you into his schedule. Very glad you come with me. Why, I know you have a lot of things to do. I'm glad to be seen with you. Now, do they believe all that? I don't know. I don't care. My wife doesn't believe half what I tell her. She doesn't, but she's glad I tell her. You see, the point is not always what you say, it's why you say it. And I'll tell you, you can be way down, and if somebody loves you, says a gracious word, it goes a long way. A long way. And we have to work at it. Some people, you see, it's a habit. Some people are in the habit of the ungracious word. I've been in homes where everybody was in the habit of picking at each other. Kids pick at each other. And it's natural. It comes with the hormones. But you have to put a stop to it, you know, in the home. We don't allow that, friends. We don't allow certain words. We don't allow our kids to say, shut up. It's not cussing, but it's close enough. It's not cussing. It's not obscene. It's bitter. It's bitter. I don't like bitter talk. Why? My house, I'm king, and I'll have the kind of talk I want. My kingdom, and my kingdom is going to have the kind. I like noise. I don't like quiet kids. I don't trust quiet kids. But I want noise in my house, but I want my kind of noise. Understand? I want to hear what I want to hear, and I'm responsible for the noise in my house. And if you're going to tear each other apart, you're going to run into trouble with the king. Well, I'm very serious about that. And we don't allow this bitterness. You don't pick it. You don't take. It's a rule in our house. We belong to the same family. We have the same last name. We are on the same side. And we do not tear each other apart. We're not in that business. Look, and you need to set your kids down once in a while and say, look, in this house, we are not in the business of tearing each other apart. We're in the business of building each other up. And if you can't do that, then you go out and think about it for a while and then come back in. Remember whose house you live in. Now, sometimes, you see what this does. Sometimes you have to speak the word of rebuke several times a day. But you see, now listen to me, the gracious word makes room for the word of rebuke. And so kids will hear the word of rebuke without losing their attitude, without getting mean. You understand? If you've told a kid 10 times you think he's doing great, he'll let you tell him that he's messed up and not hate you for it. And I'll tell you, our wives need to hear it, and our husbands need to hear it. It's grace versus law, you see. Now, sometimes we have to understand. I'm not talking about some kind of Pollyannish unreality. I'm simply talking about making a positive program of sweetening the air. And we need to learn the art of giving compliments. Men are not very good at giving compliments, and women aren't very good at receiving them. They haven't had much practice. The art of giving a compliment. Let me teach you the art of giving a compliment. You ready? The art of giving a compliment is that you seize the moment. You give compliments when they're at the time. Seize the moment. Say a word which will sound silly sometimes, but that's okay. There are worse things than being made silly. And we need to focus on the person, not the act. You see, fellas, you don't have to like what she cooked to appreciate the fact that she cooked it. You don't have to like what she's wearing at the moment to appreciate the fact that you're glad that she's your wife, and you can tell her that. Focus on the person, not the act. You can be creative. It's great fun, by the way. We need fun. You know, every home needs some fun. And men are good at receiving compliments because men are naturally arrogant. All men are naturally arrogant. They really are. We are. You pay a man a compliment, he immediately believes you. It's true. It's true. Men are very good at receiving. Men are excellent at receiving compliments. I mean, somebody tells me, well, that's one of the greatest sermons I ever heard. I believe him. I mean, my attitude is, yeah, probably one of the great sermons of the 20th century, you know. No doubt in my mind, you know. I just automatically believe it. Now, but women aren't. Women, you know, women are very bad at receiving compliments. You know what women do? Women, they first of all, they refuse compliments. You shouldn't refuse a compliment. They'll say, She'll say, "Honey boy, you sure do look great tonight." And she'll say, "You're just saying that." Of course, I'm just saying. Don't refuse it. Suppose your husband brought home a nice gift wrapped in pretty red paper. And he said, "Honey, I stopped and got this for you." And you took the gift and you threw it down, stepped on it. How long would it be before you got another gift? That's one of the reasons you're not getting many compliments. You stepped on too many. A compliment is a gift. Don't refuse it. Secondly, don't analyze it. For God's sake, don't analyze it. "Honey, I like that dress." "Oh, what do you like about it?" That's a good supper, honey." "Oh, last night's wasn't?" I learned this, by the way, from the men. Somebody said, "I really like that sermon. A deacon told that one time. I really like that sermon. I really made the mistake. I was just a kid saying, 'What did you like about it?' He didn't remember it." So if you get a compliment, understand, you don't analyze it, ladies. Don't analyze it. Third, don't discount it. "Honey, that's a beautiful outfit." "Well, I got this at a garage sale, and it's..." You know, some women are born explainers. Most women are born explainers. I mean, you say that's a pretty necklace, they want to tell you where they got it, how much they paid for it. They want you to know that it really isn't as good as it looks. Most women just have that, they're just naturally that way. You say you look nice, they want you to know, "Well, this whole thing." I swear, if you had a woman who had on a $1,000 outfit, yeah, and you said, "Honey, that looks great," she said, "Yes, but I have on ragged underwear." or something like that. Anything to discount it. Just discount it. Women are good at that. I'm serious. Now, my wife has taught me more than I've taught her, but I taught her this. I had to teach my wife how to receive a compliment. I'd give her a compliment, she'd either refuse it, analyze it, or discount it. And I got sick of that. I said, "Honey, I'm going to give you compliments the rest of your life, because you're a mighty fine woman, and you've earned them. I'm going to give them to you, earn them or not, but you've got to learn how to take them. And so I'm going to teach you, ladies, tonight. I promise you this would be practical, and this is as practical as I know how to get. I'm going to teach you right now, in a few seconds, how to receive a compliment. Are you ready? Repeat after me, ladies. Thank you." Just say it. "Thank you." That's all it is. And you see, now you've learned the art of receiving a compliment. I still, my wife, every so often, I just say, "Stop. Repeat after me. Thank you." And my wife will say, "Thank you." Because my wife, bless her heart, is a born explainer. And that's fun. You see, it's more fun to argue about how to receive a compliment than to argue about a lot of other dumb stuff. And listen to me, it's a habit most of the time. Most bitterness in the home is a habit. It's a rotten habit. And habits are created, and habits can be broken, and new habits can be created. If the air in your home isn't sweet, I urge you to sweeten it with the spoken word. The gracious word, the word fitly spoken, like apples of gold on talents of silver. And there's a great deal to say. And I'll tell you, sometimes the word, it's the spoken word, just the right word, can make all the difference in the world. Some real bad moments can be turned into good moments. Some hard moments can be made easy. And some sour times can be made a little less sour by the spoken word. Kind word. And honey, I've had a rough day today, but seeing you makes it a good day anyway. I'm glad you're here when I get here. Doesn't take much to say that, but it makes a difference. You understand? I may say, if you're interested in money, I'll put it in these terms: it's the best investment you'd ever make. You never get more return out of a cheaper investment than the gracious word. And it works. Take my word for it. Well, any questions on this? Y'all can speak up. Have any questions or comments? you want to make before I go on? I want to talk about romance in the home. The rule is, it's more fun to date, it's more important to date after the wedding than it is before. It's also more fun. Don't have to take her home. Romance. Now, right away, all the women are going to know exactly what I'm talking about. Most men won't. When it comes to romance, most men are clods. That's spelled C-L-O-D. Many aren't. God created romantic love. Romantic love, as I said last night, I believe, in another connection, romantic love is just as much the creation of God as any other kind of love. And romantic love does not just happen, it has to be created. I sort of picked up on this when I heard people talking, especially older people. They'd say, well, back in the day, they would speak of their mate and their courting days, back in the days when our dating days. And by that they meant, they said, back when we used to date, they meant before they got married. Now, everybody has the need to be the object of romantic love. It isn't always possible. But if we come to the place in life where we feel that we are no longer the object of romantic love, life is different and something is missing. That's why it's so very hard for people who have lived with a mate for 40 or 50 years and they lose them. They lose their lover, their sweetheart. It's very hard. Very hard. You understand? We can get by without being the object of romantic love. But something's missing. Why? God created us this way, to be loved romantically. I have the need, we have it written right across our forehead, right next to 660. right there is, it's, I want to be somebody's sweetheart. You got that? I want to be somebody's sweetheart. I don't care what age you are. Does it make a difference? It doesn't stop when you retire. We want to be somebody's sweetheart. And it's very important to us. Now, romantic love must be cultivated. And that's why I teach that it's more important to date after the wedding than it is before. Here's what often happens in a home. That when a couple first gets married, before they have any children, of course the husband-wife relationship is the primary relationship. You understand? That's the dominant relationship in the home because it's the only relationship in the home. And then little Junior comes along. And all of a sudden, honey becomes mother. I grew up this way. My dad always called my mother, mother. And I never thought anything. And there's nothing wrong with that. You may do that, and that's not really to the point. It doesn't matter. It's not a question of what you say so much as how you think. But, and so, you know, as I said last night, we tend to raise our kids the way we were raised. And after, when we started our family, and we always speak to your little children, you know, go ask your mother. So one day I referred to Linda, that's my wife's name, as mother. Well, I heard my dad always do. And boy, she stopped me right there. She said, I am not your mother. It's very true. I never called her that since. She does not permit me to call her mother. And she's right. She's very smart. You see, in many homes, as soon as the children come along, the parent-child relationship becomes the dominant relationship. And then the woman in the house, especially, she especially suffers under this. Her primary role stops being sweetheart, wife, mate. Her primary role starts being mother. You recognize that? Happens all the time. You want to ruin a kid, by the way. You make him the center of the home as soon as he comes along. I might repeat this tomorrow when we come to raising children, but I'll just say it here because it has to be said here. What I teach is this, when you have your children, if you want to really ruin your kids, you live for them. You restructure your life around your children and make your plans always around your children, where you can go or can't go depends on what little Junior wants to do or doesn't want to do. And I promise you, the day will come when you'll be glad when that kid leaves home. The rule at our house is we got here first. Live your life. Take your kids along for the ride. They'll enjoy it better, and you'll like them better. You understand? Live your life. Take your kids along for the ride. They'll be okay. Do not live for the children. You'll ruin them. And one of the ways you do this, and this is very, very important, is you must preserve in the home the husband-wife relationship as the primary relationship. We simply must do that. And that it goes a long way toward keeping the kids in their place. Understand? Not the head of the house. And so, and many women especially suffer under this. They get the feeling, and women will say this, I'm nothing around here but the maid. I'm a maid and the cook. You need to say to your kids sometimes, look, Aaron, I didn't marry her, that lady who's, you know, around the house, your mother, I didn't marry her, so you'd have somebody to pick up your underwear. I'll tell you what this does. It gives the kids a perspective, and it gives them security. Now, I'm going to say this a couple of times in other connections. We begin to overlap now because the husband-wife relationship does overlap with the parent-child relationship. And here's one of the places. Security is more important to a child than love. You got that? Security is more important than love. And what is the source of a child's security? The source of a child's security is the husband-wife relationship. If the husband-wife relationship is strong, a child, all other things being more or less equal, has security. Got that? It's a very important to learn that. That the source of security is the husband-wife relationship. That is, what really causes a kid to lose his security is when mom and dad don't get along. That's why divorce is so very hard on children. And you ever do this? Did you ever see this? This is science. If you've had children, you come home from work and your kids are in diapers. You can have a kid in the next room looking the other way, playing with a toy, and you can walk in the kitchen, and you can start loving on your wife, you know, and pinch her buns or whatever you do, and you can go to hugging on her, and she's pushing you away, saying leave me alone, but now she isn't pushing very hard. You know, she's saying, oh, quit that, I'm trying to fix supper. And I said, you cook and I'll kiss. And you start fooling around a little bit. And pretty soon you got something clamped to your leg. Ever notice that? What is it? The kid. I mean, whatever he was doing, I promise you, whatever he's doing, he'll quit. And he'll come. And we all, well, what's going on? You ever seen that? Never did that in your home? I can get teenagers out of the back of the house. I can grab their mother and pick her up, and she's, oh, put me down, hit them, and go to love and honor, and I can fill my kitchen full of teenagers. Takes less than a minute. You know, now they're not saying, you know, like clamping, like they did when they were in diapers. They're saying, go, Dad, go for it. you know, there's Dad, he's, you know, there's Dad's at it again. Now, kids, I'm serious. You want to turn kids on? What turns kids on? If Dad loves Mom, Mom loves Dad. Here's how kids think. They may not say it, and I mean, kids of all ages, they start out as toddlers. As soon as they begin to perceive things, albeit dimly, here's how their mind, this is what goes on in their heads. A lot, that you can put it this way, a lot can go wrong, but as long as Dad and Mom love each other, I'm okay. No matter what else happens, as long as Mom and Dad love each other, I'm okay. But you see, and that security is preserved best when the primary relationship in the home is the husband-wife relationship. So I say to the kids, and you know, kids will try to divide you. They try to divide and conquer, you know. Mom, Dad, Daddy, Mom said this. What do you think? And I say, son, She got here first. The rule is I'm on her side even if she's wrong. See, long-term security is better than short-term justice. You got that? Long-term security is better than short-term justice. Well, Daddy, that's not fair. Good. Whoever told you life was fair? Or I planned it that way, you know. Things have been too fair. Things have been too fair around here lately. That doesn't scare me. No, that's not fair. I don't care. I love that woman. I'm on her side, even if she's wrong. Why? Because, you see, kids need to know that they're not first around there, and they like it that way. They don't want to be first. Do you hear me? They don't want to be first. Because you spoil the kid, making him number one in the home, and you take away his security. That's the price you pay.
Exactly right.
And the kid would rather have the security than to be first in the home. And it's great for discipline. Puts it in a whole perspective. You know, you can discipline kids and turn them on at the same time, or you can discipline and turn them off. One of my favorite memories when my oldest son, he was a compliant child when he was born. He'd give lessons on how to repent. I mean, I could just point the finger at him, he'd melt. Until he became a teenager and all of his hormones went to his mouth. Good kid, but he gets mouthy sometimes. And sometimes he gets, you know, we used to call it sassing. He ruled our house, be careful how you talk to that woman. Why? Because there's this guy around here who's in love with her, and he hears you're in trouble. And he mouthed off to his mother, and I said, son, get to your room. You and I are going to have a meeting. And we went in there and closed the door, and I started talking. I said, Aaron, he was glad I was talking. He was thrilled to death I was talking. And Aaron was 14 at the time, never forget. Aaron's a fine young man, one of my good friends. I said, Aaron, you've lived in this house about 14 years. Yes, Daddy. He's agreeing to everything. You know, he's trying to stay alive. he said, yes. I said, you know your old man, don't you? Yeah, Dad. I said, let me ask you a question. What do you think? Suppose the man across the street talked to your mother the way you just talked to her. What do you think I would do? Oh, I don't know. But you know I'd do something, wouldn't I? Yeah. Why? Nobody talks to my wife like that. I'm crazy about that woman. And so don't you ever mistreat her in my presence, or you're in trouble, some kind of trouble. I'll make trouble. You do not talk to my wife like that. The man across the street doesn't talk to her like that, and you don't talk to her like that. You know, he liked that. You see, it's one thing to say, don't talk back to your mother. It's something else to say, be careful how you treat my wife. See the difference? It's all the difference in the world. You see, he learns a valuable lesson, but it increases his security. Wow. Don't ever mess with mom and dad. Why? They stick together. I had my second son tell me that one time when we went home from school. Most of his friends are from broken homes. He was 8 years old. He said, Daddy, I'm glad you and mom love each other. At least I don't have to worry about that. And he's a worrywart. He worries about everything. World peace. So the way we preserve, one of the most important ways to preserve the husband-wife relationship as the primary relationship in the home is to preserve romance. That is, we need, kids are delighted when mom and dad love each other, and when dad dates mom. And when they come home and see the flowers and the notes, they say, well, the old man's at it again. You know him. I remember one time I took my wife on a big dressed-up fancy date, and our oldest daughters were teenagers. And they helped her get dressed. She changed dresses 3 times. Oh, mother, you're not going to wear that, are you? Oh, come on, mother, not that. And helped her fix her hair. And they hovered over for an hour and a half while she got ready. On the way out, they told me to have her home by 11:30. I didn't, but I'm the king. I don't have to. I tell you, those girls are delighted. They think it's great. You know, behave yourselves. You know, they're making all kinds of snide remarks as you're taking your wife out to the car, you know, and open the door for her. and they're teasing you, but they love it. They love it. And one of the benefits this has is that when our children get to be teenagers and they start dating, we're going to want to talk to them about their love life. They come to the age when they're going to date and choose a mate and get married. Listen to me, fellas. If they've never seen you date their mother, if your sons, for example, have never seen you date their mother, you're wasting your time giving them advice about their dating life. They'll listen very politely, their eyes will glaze over, and they'll ignore you completely. What do you know about it? Your experience is 17 years old. You haven't dated in 17 years. What have you got to say about the subject? They won't say that to you, but that's what they're thinking. You hear me? That's what they're thinking. when it comes to sex education, you see, it will create a great attitude if they see that you know something about the subject. Not that you give demonstrations, but at least they know Dad and Mom love each other. I know when it came to sex education, we had a nice deal. My wife had gave all the details to the daughters and me to the sons. The daughters came first, so it was great till the sons came along. It was my job. I mean, said to Aaron, I want to talk to you about sex. Yeah, Dad. First thing I want you to know is I'm for it. I think it's one of the best ideas God ever had. And now once more, I'm pretty good at it. Your mother and I love each other, and we think it's great, and I'm going to tell you how to make it great. You do it God's way. You got that? You do it God's way, and they have to listen to you. Why? Because they figure you're a pro. I tell them I am. I'm not, but I tell them that. And you can say to a son, kid, all your life you're going to need to know how to treat a woman. If you're going to be happy, you're going to need to know how to treat a woman. A lot of men don't know how to treat a woman. I want you to know, you just watch your old man. I'll show you how to treat a woman. That sound arrogant? I don't care. It's my kid. I'll raise him any way I want to. And it's better to have you think me arrogant than to have a kid that doesn't know how to treat a woman and lose his marriage because he's a clod. And my boy, oldest boy, started dating this past year. And boy, he's good at it. The girls line up. And he won't go steady. I'll tell you, it was the talk of Winter Park High School. 8,000 students. Aaron and his friend, they did it right. Shot his whole bank account. I could have killed him. A dozen roses. I'll tell you, where I had to draw the line? At a chauffeur-driven limousine. That's for the prom. I mean, I said, no. That's, and he was glad I drew the line, but I had to draw it. I mean, he was going whole hog. And he dated it, took a real nice girl. My point is that I need to start, when my kids are little, preparing them for a happy marriage. You understand that? We need to start. And one of the best things we can do is to preserve romantic love. And speak the language of love. And our kids want us to. Do you understand what I'm saying? Does this sound crude or worldly? I don't mean for it to be. Hear me. God created romantic love. He created it for marriage. He created it to be a very beautiful thing. And it's hard to be happy if somebody doesn't love us. And we know it. I never saw my father date my mother because that's the way he was raised. My dad's a great man, and he taught me many great lessons. But I had to learn this on my own. And probably because we were raised poor through some of the years, not all the years. Some of the years were hard years. And but anyway, we need to think this way. What is the art of romantic love? It's the flowers, it's the poem, it's the dumb compliments. It's the teasings, it's the dates. You know what a real date is? I'll tell you what a date is. Now, women know, men don't. So for the sake of young couples, I'll teach you what a real date is if you don't know. A man, he'll call up his wife and say, honey, it's Friday night, you've had a hard week. Bring the kids and meet me at the steakhouse, and I'm buying supper. So she brings the kids, meets him at the steakhouse, he buys supper, Does she appreciate that? Oh, she sure does. But he thinks it's a date. And she knows it isn't. Well, I just took you out last Friday. Yeah, me and the kids to the steakhouse. Right, ladies? Is it nice? Is it a date? Not a date. Tell you what a date is. Date is, you tell your wife, say, hey, we're going out tonight, dress up big. I won't surprise you. And don't worry about feeding the kids. I'll stop by McDonald's on the way home. They'd rather have that anyway. And I'll get the babysitter. You just get yourself ready. You come home with a little flower or something. Say, let her spend her. You understand? She doesn't have to get the babysitter. Doesn't have to pick out the place, make the reservations, or fix supper. Just take her out. Keep her out late. Act a fool. All kinds of ways. I'll tell you, let me tell you my statement again. Dating is not only more important after the wedding, it's much more fun. And the kids will be glad, and your wife will be glad, and you'll be glad, and there's joy in it. The art of romantic love. You need to learn it. Does that sound like it's not spiritual? I think it's one of the most spiritual things we'll ever do. The art of romantic love. Well, that's all I have to say about that. Let's take our break now, about 10 minutes, to get some coffee on downstairs. About 10 minutes, 10, 12 minutes. Then we'll go for another 45 minutes, and then we'll quit for the night because we got to start again in the morning. We're dismissed.